order and open the public hearing for House Bill 5034, Department of Land Conservation and Development Committee. Department. Sue, would you tell us, I guess we all have for the record, the testimony from Region 2050. Mm-hmm. Is that how we'd identify that?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And is there anything else you need to announce to us?
I don't think so. The agency was going to continue and finish up its presentation, and then we have the presentation by Lisa Pearson from Budget Management on the governor's budget for the agency. And there is a piece of information that the agency has brought forth in response to a question yesterday, I believe, and they can go over that. And then we've also got public testimony scheduled today.
Yeah. Okay. I have not chance to talk to you. What I'd like to do today is, Lisa, have your report, and maybe, Nan, if you could clarify what you've got here on our desk. And then I'd like to go straight to public testimony. And the reason for this is they're having a reception for Denny Jones today, and I'd like to break this committee a little bit early if we can. So anyone who'd like to testify, it will be coming up very shortly, and you need to sign up on the sign-up sheet. So go ahead, Lisa.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, my name is Lisa Kirsten with the Department of Administrative Services. You should have a document that looks like this in front of you. If you turn to page 2, there's a chart or table of historical expenditures. And based on the discussion yesterday and, of course, recent events, this has become, in terms of the governor's balanced budget, more and more of a moot point. But originally, when the budget was published in December, the overall budget was a 7.7% increase from the fifth special session level. And the primary reason for that was because of the expectation of that federal emergency management money that was mentioned yesterday won't be available. Otherwise, there's nearly a 14% decrease in general fund and nearly an 18% decrease in full-time equivalent.
And that's compared to what, since we had different numbers?
Compared to the budget through the fifth special session, the 2001-03 budget through the fifth special session. Turning to page 3, this chart shows the different funding types. General fund does comprise the majority of the biggest portion of the funding for this agency at about 59%. As of December, when we were expecting to get this federal money from FEMA, federal funds made up about 43%. And then other funds makes up about 8%. Other funds come from charges for services, miscellaneous receipts, and also from ODOT in terms of, for example, the Transportation Growth Management Program, some mineral aggregate work in the past. But there isn't nearly as much in the way of other funds as some other natural resource agencies. And then, of course, the federal funds come from the Federal Emergency Management Program and also the Coastal Zone Management Grant Program. And that is a spot of good news in that it has currently been stable and slightly up. Turning to page 4, again, this slide would show that there was, as of December, a 7.7% increase from the fifth special session in the proposed budget. It did incorporate major changes from the special sessions, including reductions to attorney general costs, temporary staff expenditures for Measure 56 notifications for landowners, professional service contract dollars, and grant funds to local government. What was continued at that point was Coastal Zone Management Program and also financial and technical assistance to local communities, but at a reduced level. Turning to page 5, this graphically represents some of the information that was presented yesterday in a numerical tabular format. Operations is the largest program unit at 76% of the total budget, followed by the grant program at 22% and the Measure 56 notice program at 2%. Turning to page 7, this graph shows where the majority of expenditures or how the expenditures break out. Personal services is the largest category of expenditures at 45%, followed by special payments, which are the grants, at 26%, and services and supplies at 29%, and then special payments, which are the grants, at 26%. Turning to page 7, this slide shows how the governor's balanced budget was created. It started with a legislatively adopted budget and incorporated emergency boards through April of 2002. This included the Coastal Atlas Project, which is in conjunction with Oregon State University, and that was the resource mapping inventory system. There was the wetlands grant, which was also discussed yesterday. There is a piece in a policy package. But for 18 months of this current biennium, there were dollars available for technical and scientific expertise to local governments in developing wetland ordinances. In special session 2, there were reductions to employee training. Unspecified reductions included professional services and further training cuts. There was also a reduction to Senate Bill 12 grants, which was actually supposed to have come out anyway, and also the Measure 56 temporary positions and special payments took reductions. The base budget adjustments, as with other agencies at this point, does not reflect the elimination of the merit increases, but that is coming out, and we are working with LFO to make sure that that does come out. Turning to page 8, there was the standard non-position information control system changes for mass transit and things like temporaries, et cetera. Then we get to the phase out and phase in package 020. The regional problem-solving program was operated only for a year of this current biennium. The positions went away, but the services and supplies don't automatically go away unless you manually take action. So that's what this reflects. The buildable lands inventory project that was conducted with OECDD also had services and supplies that need to come out because that was a one-time project. And then the portion of the Environmental Protection Agency wetlands grant that I just mentioned ran for 18 months in this current biennium, that services and supplies expenditure needed to come out as well. The next change that will need to be made is in the inflation and price list adjustments. As I mentioned before, in natural resources, unlike the big three, public safety, education, and human services, an adjustment was not made to pull out that inflation, but it will be pulled out in time for the work session and be probably adopted in legislatively adopted budget. Policy packages include the 070 revenue shortfall that we spent quite a bit of time on yesterday with trying to true up the budget and make sure that the federal dollars that are available for coastal are actually spent on positions that do coastal work. And that meant that some of the positions that were doing Willamette Valley work and had the federal coastal dollars budgeted on them needed to be eliminated out because there was not another fund source in order to pay for them. And also, the transportation growth management funding from ODOT was expected to go down, and so positions needed to come out in order to match expenditures with revenues. Turning to page 9, this gets us into the first policy packages from the special sessions. The third special session included the standard adjustment for salary range 38 and above salary adjustments. And in addition, there were further attorney general reductions, reduced professional services contracts, other services and supplies were reduced, grants to local governments were reduced, as were Measure 56 temporary services, further attorney general costs, and special payments. Package 090 is a program reduction which was added to the budget in order to provide adequate cash flow. And part of this is, you know, traditionally when we have had cost of living adjustments in a subsequent biennium, we try to make sure that there's enough ending balance in other funds for any adjustments to other fund salaries, because that won't be happening next biennium. Whether or not this package is actually needed is open to question at this point. Package 091 is the fifth special session, Section 2 adjustments that were necessary for the failure of Measure 28 in January. And this is where we get into the reorganization of the agency that was discussed throughout the agency's presentation. It also touches upon the Package 101 discussion that we had yesterday in terms of reclassifications of positions downward, abolishments, functions, et cetera. And then in addition to that, there were reductions to professional services contracts again and reductions to local grant program dollars. Turning to page 10, Package 103 is the mineral aggregate position that was discussed at some length yesterday. This package and the format that it's presented here reflects what was known as of December. And as was mentioned yesterday, ODOT has come forward and indicated that it will be able to provide additional funding. So the decision point, as was mentioned yesterday, is no longer with this package, but more with Package 101 as was presented yesterday. Package 104 continues the last 6 months of the grant for the wetlands inventory for the 2003-05 biennium. Package 105 was the map modernization that unfortunately we will not be able to fund because the federal dollars were absorbed by the Homeland Security Department. Package 107 is the one from yesterday where there was to be additional services and supplies for professional services contracts to conduct public outreach. And you may perhaps remember from yesterday that this was one that the committee seemed to be in some agreement on whether or not this would go forward. Package 108 is the dispute resolution package, which consolidates all of the dispute resolution coordinators within the Dispute Resolution Commission. And so that would eliminate a position in this agency's budget. Package 302 increases the local grants program in order to meet a commitment that was made to make sure that as much grant money as possible could go to local governments. And then turning to page 11, there are no fee or revenue changes. There are no new programs or governor's investments in the budget. And then there are the adjustments that were discussed yesterday, including the map modernization, which removes about $2 million of federal funds. Package 101, the reconciliation to true up the budget, adjusts various positions, as was mentioned yesterday. It stays within the general fund resources that was adopted or not adopted, but proposed in the governor's balanced budget, but it does ask for more federal funds expenditure limitation. Turning to page 12, the final page, the final adjustment is the Transportation Growth Management Program shift over to ODOT of four positions, three FTE, and using some savings of general fund through that transaction to fund a community development specialist. And so ultimately, the final chart here, or the table here, shows what the governor's balanced budget was as of December. The net adjustments that have been proposed with the adjusted budget as of this week, what the governor's revised, and when I say revised, I don't mean tomorrow's revised, I mean this sort of midpoint adjusted piece, and what the net effect of the adjustments we talked about this week is on those different fund types, and then the percentage change. And it also reflects the change in the full-time equivalency in positions. So this would be what the governor, as of today, would propose.
Okay, thank you. Questions from the committee? Very much. Nan, we do have quite a list of public testimony. I'd ask you to clarify the letter we have. And we'll go straight to public testimony.
Chair Mazzoli,
the department has provided one letter in response to a question that I believe you asked yesterday regarding which jurisdictions applied for and received federal money through EPA to help them complete some wetland inventories and begin the development of ordinance process. This was a competitive grant application. There are five jurisdictions, and they're listed on this handout for you.
And is there similar work being done through the Coastal Zone Management funding as well?
Chair Mazzarelli, I don't believe so. I believe the first year of last biennium, we did give some funds to a couple of jurisdictions who wanted to do some ordinance developing. I don't believe in the last year there were jurisdictions who wanted to do that, so we believe we funded it. And then, of course, the grant cycle for the $03 dollars has not begun yet.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you. Okay, let's switch to public testimony. I'd first like to ask the three commissioners we have signed up, if you'd like to come forward. If you'd like to move one of the chairs up, and that way you can all sit together, it'd be fine. Figured out. Whatever order you'd like prefers.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Randy Franke. I'm the current chair of the Land Conservation and Development Commission, and I've got two fellow commissioners here with me, and I'll let them introduce themselves when they speak. The primary reason I wanted to be here is to, one, be available for questions, if there were any questions of the commission members, or the chair in particular. Two, I think to at least let you know, certainly this year, more than any of the other years I've served in the commission, we have been very involved with the budget preparation, and that may be simply a function of we've gone through essentially what's been six special sessions, and I'll be honest with you, sometimes it was hard to keep track of which variation reduction we were looking at as they kept coming back, and then we tried to look at what additional potential reductions there were to meet the next direction to propose a reduction in the budget. But I can tell you that the commission as a whole was very involved. We had numerous meetings over the budget, numerous briefings on the budget to come up with the proposal. And I think I can also say that, you know, if we come out of this process with what the governor's balanced budget recommendation will be, that's something we can live with. I guess I'll stop there and let my fellow commissioners talk or respond to questions.
Why don't you go ahead, and then I'll open up the questions.
I'm Gary Harris, and I'm from Matters, Oregon, in Central Oregon, and I've been on the commission since 1996. So in those 6 years, I want to echo Randy's comments in that we, pardon me, Senator Messerly in the committee. Sorry for introducing myself. Those 6 years that I've been on, this is the most year I've spent time involved in budget work. You know, I've been through three sessions, and finally, because of our budget our money shortfalls, nobody likes to mess with budgets. I, as a farmer, don't like to have to budget, and I'm a past Republican chair of Jefferson County, so I believe in fiscal constraint and how to save our wise dollar. So I volunteered to be on the budget committee this year, and all last fall and all last winter, I attended meetings of the rethink committee and the stakeholders, and take ideas from across the state on how we could trim our agency and make it more lean and mean. And during those five special sessions, we came up with a lot of ideas, and we heard statewide from people, especially on the east side, which I represent, that the people that are out in the field, the John Renzes and the Laren Woolies, the John Jennings of the world, are people that are out in the field and understand the complexities of the local issues, and it was important to keep those field staff in place. I was also placed on a fund development committee with the idea of trying to find more money for our agency. As you know, our agency, besides the federal pass-through monies for the coastal program and a little bit of TGM, is all general fund dependent. And even though that's a small amount when you look at the $8.5 million, it's still dollars that you guys are trying to save. And where we had $10.5 million last year, and now we're trying to get down to $8.5 million or $8.4 million, we've had to look at a lot of organizational charts and how to reduce staff. And I think we've almost micromanaged the agency, where the people that were running it were having a hard time with commissioners telling them who they wanted to cut next. But, you know, if I look at the 60 FTE we had for the last biennium and the 48 or whatever we end up going forward for the next biennium, and I wanted to personalize it by reading some names: Kelly, Pepler, Kanzler, Butts, Harrison, Good, Webby, Blanton, Camber, Cincibelli, Knight, Chapman, Campost, and Rupp. Those are people that were key to part of our personnel load, and they're all going to be here next session. So I think we've worked hard to trim this thing down to the $8.4 million. And we will try to work with you. You know, and I'd like to hold up this demonstration for everybody. If this is my tax dollar I sent the state, and that represents a total of $10 billion or whatever you guys are going to bring in, one-tenth of one penny is what you're going to spend on land use in the state. We're just an ant on the old big heap. So we're doing our job, and we're willing to work with you if you see some inefficiencies. But the commission does have their eye on the agency.
Thank you. Sure. Chair Mesley, members of the committee, my name is John Van Landingham. I'm the vice chair of the commission. I want to talk briefly about another issue that's not directly budget-related, but which we anticipate may be on your minds, and that is the departure of Paul Curcio as director of the department. Mr. Curcio was director of the department from February 1 until 2002 until this past February 2003, so a little bit more than a year. Paul Curcio was not fired. He resigned. It is true, however, that at the time he resigned, he knew that he had lost the support of at least three of the seven members of the commission. I am one of those three. It occurred at a time when the commission was deep into an evaluation process of the commissioner, of the director, and that evaluation process included staff, stakeholders, and commissioners. It is not true, however, that his departure was staff-driven, in my opinion. I never talked to a staff person about that issue. I did talk to a lot of stakeholders about that issue. In my opinion, it was commission-driven. And I should note, by the way, that the commission would much rather not have the power to hire and fire the director of the department, at least this commission. We would much rather that the governor have it. But given that it is our responsibility, we are trying to exercise it correctly. This commission is the commission that hired Paul Curcio in December of 2001 to start in February of 2002. In my opinion, we hired him for two reasons. First, we felt and still feel that the land use program needs greater flexibility, especially with regard to economic development. And we felt that Paul Curcio was the man who could help the land use program do that. The second is that we felt then and still feel that the land use program needs to do a better job of relating to the public and to the legislature about the program itself. And we felt that Paul Curcio was the person to do that job. This is the same commission now, and this commission has the same views about those needed changes. The reasons for hiring Paul Curcio in the first place have not changed. What has changed is the conclusion of some of the commissioners that Paul Curcio was the right person to lead us to those two changes. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, comments to the committee? Representative Morgan.
Mr. Franke, how long have you been on the commission?
Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan, I was afraid somebody was going to ask me that question. I was trying to do the math in my head early this morning. I was first appointed to fill a vacancy, unexpired term, I guess, was then Mr. Troop from Deschutes County, who I replaced. And this is, I think, my last year of my two full terms, so I think I'm probably right close to 10 years.
10 years. Mr. Van Landingham, how long have you been on the commission?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, 3 years exactly.
3 years? Mr. Chair, if I might? There was an issue that was brought forth during the budget presentation that the agency had incorrectly funded positions with coastal grant funds. Can you talk to the committee about when the commission became aware of this issue?
Chair Messerly, Representative Morgan, I can at least give you my best recollection of that, and certainly John or Gary can add to that. I believe it was two, maybe three, but I think more like 2 years ago was the first time that I heard about the issue. And at that time, it was characterized more as a glitch in how the legislature funded the department vis-a-vis the coastal program and the general fund. And in all candor, there was not a lot of detail offered at the time. It was presented in a, you know, this is just a glitch. We're still trying to work with getting it fixed.
Follow-up, thank you. Was this prior to the 01 session budget presentation, do you recall? Or was it after that? Or
I think it was after, I believe.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I can remember the meeting at which we first talked about it, and that was in Eugene. And it was after the 01 session, as we were beginning to prepare budget items. Bill Blosser was the interim director. So it was after Dick Benner had left as director, and Benner was director for 10 years. And so Bill Blosser was bringing it to our attention. And it was we were preparing for this budget at that time, and we spent quite a bit of the last 2 years preparing for this budget. So while I was on board for at least one other budget, the 2001 budget, I don't remember it being raised then. I do remember it being raised extensively in preparation for this budget.
And do you recall who was managing the coastal program when this issue was brought forward?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I do not. My guess would be that Mann was in 2001, but...
Do you recall the substance of the discussion? Did the board or did the commission give the agency any direction on this issue?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I believe our direction was that we needed to straighten out how it was described to us, that it wasn't an inappropriate expenditure of the funds, it was an incorrect way to account for the funds, and that we needed to clarify, set the accounting method right. And the commission's direction was, yes, do it. It was going to cost money, and so, we were in a phase where any money that we took out to address this would mean less money to do field work or grants, so it was not happily received by the commission, which is why I remember it. But the direction was to fix it.
So that was 2 years ago. So in between that period of time when the issue was first brought to your attention and where we are right now in time, what was the follow-up that the commission... did you do any kind of due diligence to see what was going on with the resolution to this?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, I would say that we did not do extensive follow-up, that we could have and should have done a better job of follow-up. The meeting that I referred to in Eugene where I first remember it being discussed was Bill Blosser's last meeting as interim director. Our next meeting had... we were in the process of hiring a new director at the time, and I think that took quite a bit of our time. Mr. Kircho came on as director in February of 2002, and we've spent a lot of that interim time working on budget. So it's been a part of our analysis, but I don't believe that I, for example, as a commissioner, did enough to follow up on the issue.
When you first took the issue up in the commission, did you discuss with the management level of the agency how forthcoming they'd be in with the commission with regards to this issue?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, I don't believe that we questioned staff's honesty with the commission. I did not feel myself at the time that staff had misled us. And so I don't believe that any of us, I don't recall any of us asking questions that implied that staff had not been honest with us.
So if I might, Mr. Chair, you don't recall any questions about how long this had been going on or what attempts had been made to inform the Budget Management Office or the Legislative Fiscal Office about what the situation was?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I believe all I can say is that I recall that staff indicated that it had been occurring for a long time, which I took to be a number of years. And I don't recall any greater detail than that.
Follow up?
If I might, Mr. Chair, when we find out that we have been misled, whether it is intentional or unintentional, in our attempts to do our budgeting in this process, I think you can imagine how frustrating it is and the trust that's destroyed in that process. I think that the issue to me, and I chaired this committee during the last session when this issue should have been brought forward in good faith and dealt with, and considering that, my understanding was that Ms. Evans was in charge of that program at that time, that the information wasn't conveyed to BAM, that the information, it was conveyed to BAM, but in such a way that it was impossible for them to understand what the situation really was. It wasn't conveyed at all to the Legislative Fiscal Office. And so I think through the actions of the agency, this issue became misrepresented and was not dealt with in the deliberations that took place in this building. And to start budgeting or to start budget discussions and discussions that are based on a truthful exchange of information from that point is a total fraud. And I think that the trust that's been destroyed because of something like that is going to take a long time to be repaired. And I know that when I don't know if the interim director has shared with you that this committee is not very happy with the quality of the presentation that we've gotten this time, or the detail of information, or the what we see is an extremely conflicted mission of this agency. But all of this rolled together is extremely distressing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, all I can say is that we do understand that the committee is very unhappy with this particular issue. As Commissioner Harris indicated, the commission has spent a significant amount of time on budget issues in the last 2 years that it did not gather before my time. I have tried to be honest and say that I don't think we did as much as we should have done with regard to clearing up the issue when we first were told of it. But I believe that we're paying far greater attention to the budget than we have in the past. But you're absolutely right that it was a mistake and it should have been fixed. That's all I can say.
I'll just sit here and steam myself for a while.
As Chairman, Representative Morgan, I can understand that. Both past Chairman. Senator Dukes?
Yeah, I don't think that I really blame the Commission, because the more I listen to this piece, the more I think that Representative Krieger and I were informed last session, along with Anna Husing, and didn't know it. Because the three of us sat down with Nan with very specific coastal budget. Remember the chair asked us last session on the coastal zone management money, the additional we were going to get, what did we want to do with it as coastal caucus members? And it was you and I and Anna who sat down. We had detailed positions for that money, which, heaven help us, didn't make any sense to us. And we went over and over and over, and we got the explanation. And I think it was at the end we got the legitimate explanation, and we finally made sense of it and said, this is what we want. So I'm not sure that we didn't get it, except that in the bigger sense, we didn't get it. And so I can, it's hard. Commissions like yours have more of a responsibility for the day-to-day working operations of your agency than agencies where the governor appoints the director. And so we tend to hold you more responsible. But we ask volunteers to come. I don't think we pay any of you for this. We ask volunteers to come down and put themselves on the line and come to meetings and do the extra stuff. And as long as they think staff's doing a good job, you're going to accept it. And when you thought staff wasn't meeting your needs, you dealt with it. So I have to admit, I started thinking about it yesterday, and then sitting here and thinking about it again. And I think we were given all the information we needed to come to that conclusion, except there was no reason for us to figure out how to come to that conclusion.
Any other comments, questions? I was in the Coastal Caucus too. Mm-hmm. When I heard that information. At least I wasn't on this budget committee at the time, but I assumed that it was being properly budgeted, properly accounted for. I just want to say that we had quite a discussion earlier. I think, Mr. Franke, you might have been here that day. It might have been Tuesday, about the strategic plan and the process that the commission went through and how open to the public that was and who had input. We had a concern as a committee, as the goals looked pretty good, but how you get that to the ground, there was a discussion about that as well, is how much input was into the committee. I just want to say that I have had contact with the governor's office. I'm going to be very cautious in going to work session on this budget, and I'm going to expect to have a direct involvement with the governor's staff prior to this budget coming out. What the committee and what the chair went through last session will not happen this session. We're going to have clear knowledge of where the department and the commission and the budgeting is going to be, and to where the BAM staff and our fiscal staff will be fully aware of how the department is being operated before I'm ready to call for a work session with this budget. So if you'd like to respond to that, that'd be fine.
Mr. Chair, if I may, thank you. Commissioner Franke, Chair of the Commission. You have our commitment, my commitment as Chair, and I'm confident my Vice Chair and other Commission member here, as well as the Director, that we will cooperate 100% with you in that effort. That is the way we have talked and the way we do business, and both the new director and myself and the other members, we all believe in open, honest communication. The only thing I can say, I think, to add to what John said is we understand there have been some issues. We understand you're not happy. I wouldn't feel any differently than any of you if I was in your position. I've sat in budget hearings for a long time as a county commissioner, 24 years. So I would have the same feelings if what you have found out, I'd heard and sit in the same position. All I can say is when it first was described to me, as best of my recollection, it was not described in a way that led me in any way to believe that anybody was hiding anything. It was just a glitch, and they were working with the legislator trying to get it fixed, and it was a money issue, and they didn't have the money to fix it one time, and they're going to ask them again. That was, as best I can recall, that kind of general discussion. There was no intimation at all that there was anything awry or that anybody was keeping any information from anybody. I certainly wouldn't have condoned that. That was just not part of the discussion.
We did go through five special sessions during the interim as well, in which we combed every budget, and we're not aware of the vacancies that were being used to in some of the funding sources that and efficiencies that were being used, and it would have been very helpful as we were balancing our state budgets. I've also discussed with the governor's staff that for the good of the department, that we need to, the governor recommend that he move forward with a permanent director and appointing a permanent director. And I want to, in your defense, say that I appreciate very much your coming forward yesterday and honestly laying this out for us. That's something that had to be done, and I'm sure it was not easy for you to do that. But it was not a pleasant day for us as committee members. So. With that, I thank you very much and appreciate the work you're doing, but there's an awful lot of work we have yet to do.
We understand. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Next, I'd like to call Stephen Kapori.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Kapori. I'm here today representing the Oregon chapter of the American Planning Association. I came to this building with Denny Jones 30 years ago, and I would like to leave shortly too, so I'll be very brief. We're supportive of the bill 5034 and the budget as produced by the governor, balanced budget. We understand there have been cuts in it, and there are cuts in all the budgets, and we accept those. We think that what you have in front of you today is a bottom line, and we're concerned about any further budget cuts that may occur.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Comments? Thank you. And next, I'd like to call, I think we bring up another chair if you'd like, and I'll take John Chandler, Don Schellenberg, and Rich Angstrom. We've got a chair up here. You can slide up, I think. Is that one next to you vacantly, sir? I mean, there's no material on it. Here we've got one. That's fine. Lots of chairs.
Good afternoon. My name is Rich Angstrom. I'm the president of the Oregon Concrete and Aggregate Producers Association. I'm here to testify in favor of the aggregate position and the department's budget. On the aggregate position specifically, the industry's had a pretty rough year as far as aggregate issues are concerned. We've had a series of Court of Appeals decisions and decisions by NOAA Fisheries that have significantly limited our access to aggregate around the state. The Beaver State decision essentially got rid of the conditional use process, which is a process that most of the small miners use to get aggregate sited. NOAA, a month or so ago, came out and said that they're interested in getting the industry out of the rivers, which really has a significant impact on the coastal communities. And then the Eugene Sand and Gravel case came out, and it essentially set a no-dust standard on farmland, which will make it very difficult for the industry to get aggregate sited on the EFU land. As far as the issues around transportation, most of the aggregate in the state, about 60% of the state production, which it runs about 50 million-ish, is used for road construction. Of that, the cost of that, 40 to 60% of the cost of building roads is actually is used for aggregate. So it represents a fairly substantial part of the cost of building roads. It's also one of the interesting things is that we're a very interesting economic model, because the first thing that happens in any kind of economic recovery is aggregate gets laid down, and we usually get to see right at the beginning of an economic recovery. Our economists are still estimating it won't be until 2005 that Oregon starts bumping out of this. In any event, the aggregate position is a technical assistant position that guides not only local governments, but helps out industry, cities, counties, and other interested folks that have issues around aggregate in applying specifically the Goal 5 rule. The funding issue on this particular position is going to be reliant on the 101 package, which is going to be about 58% about 58% of the cost to fully fund the position. ODOT, who has traditionally paid for this position, is going to be putting in 25%, and we're still looking for about another 17% for the position. There has been some discussion around. Let me say it this way. One of the things is that I know that this particular committee is looking at is the direction of the department. And there are three areas that I pay pretty close attention to and I think have been a significant help to industry. One of them has been the aggregate position. One of them has been the farm and forest position. And one of them now is that I would like to pitch, and I think John here is going to go into a little more detail, is the commercial and industrial position that the department's looking at. The aggregate position has been very helpful in solving very difficult aggregate issues around the state. They were important to the appeal process on the Beaver State case and actually did the legislative history to show that there was supposed to be a two-track process. They helped out on Eugene Santa Gravel where the opposition was arguing over the difference between layer and layers, and they were successful in prevailing on that part. That would have been catastrophic to the industry if we had not prevailed on that. They've assisted Harney County in developing the Goal 5 rule and many other issues around the state in the last biennium they've helped on. I know there has been some discussion, and I've heard a little bit that folks might think there's too many aggregate positions out there. I would point out that Dogami is the main administrator of the mine issues, and they do a very good job and are very tight in as far as how they do the work and what they are able to deliver with very little money. Last session, we, on the ODOT budget, got approval for ODOT to add a position to handle their 800 sites. That has been the only additional aggregate position for probably 20-some years. I think this position here has been here well before my time, and I think it's about two decades now that the position's been here. This is an important position to the industry. These are very difficult issues aggregate around the state, and I'd encourage the committees to support the 101 budget and at least the 83% at this funding this position. It'd be nice if we could get more, and if more money comes up out of this, I hope the 17% would the committee could find that money. Thank you.
Questions or comments for Mr. Angstrom?
Thank you. I have one. You just cited three instances where the aggregate person was especially helpful for the industry. You talked about doing the research on the Beaver case. You cited one other example, and then you talked about Goal 5 in Harney County. That's been one of my big problems with the aggregate position inside DLCD. And I think one could legitimately deduce from your testimony that they acted in favor of the industry in opposition to the opponents. If they're doing legal research that aids the industry in the Beaver case, I find that very problematic, that a state agency is doing research in favor of an industry in a legal proceeding. Maybe you could help me understand something I don't get here.
I glossed over that for brevity, but the department joined in the appeal of the Beaver State case because of the significant statewide consequences to getting rid of basically a whole approach that had been used since the time of the land use system and was agreed upon by everybody.
And except the courts, it appears.
Well, the courts were interpreting the statute, and certainly they found that the statutes didn't allow for that, though the practice around the state had, in the agreements with the different parties, including the Farm Bureau as an example, were that there was those two-track processes. So as part of work on that appeal for their brief, that particular person went back and looked at the legislative history and was able to show that there was supposed to be a two-track process, which we thought would help in the appeal.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. But you could easily understand how, from the opponent's point of view, that both in the work in the Goal 5 process, the modifications to Goal 5, and in these sorts of instances, that there might be the perception, maybe not the reality, but the perception that there's a pro-aggregate bias coming out of DLCD, and that could be necessarily upsetting to those people who have not always seen eye to eye with the industry.
I think I would answer it this way. The position is a neutral position, and when it agrees with the industry on issues like Beaver State and like the issue on layers versus layer, One might say that when they step in and say, oh, that's, if you do that way, there's going to be significant consequences for growing that approach, and we agree with industry. Some people will say, yeah, that's they're being biased towards industry. But I think that you got to look back and say, this position needs to make this system work. And they got to look at the whole way aggregate is sited and works in the state. Sometimes they agree with us, and sometimes they don't. I'm citing examples where they've helped us in big situations that would have, you know, fairly significant consequences to the industry and really Oregon's economy. And if someone wants to argue that, I can appreciate that that's their opinion. But there are times that that position isn't on our side. And, it's a balance. It's supposed to be a neutral position. OCAPA, as an example, doesn't advocate for one application or the other. What we argue for is a fair system and a fair process, and we hope that's what this position does at DLCD. My testimony is I believe that's what they do.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. Rich, are we adequately protecting our aggregate sources in this state, and is this a inventory in those sources a function that this department should be dealing with?
Well, no. I have to say that on the first part of your question, that the state is struggling over a direction on how to protect aggregate around the state, and I think we're headed for problems in that area. And specifically, an example is the continued litigation that we see coming out of the local governments over aggregate, finding these loopholes that are basically they're trying to kill one application, and they're bringing down the whole deck of cards. They're bringing down the whole process. And if you don't have aggregate, you're not going to have a healthy economy. You're not going to have a healthy road system, transportation system. And it's very troubling from where I sit. If NOAA Fisheries gets their way, it'll be very tough on the coast because you have no construction-grade aggregates. The coastal range was formed as marine. It's called marine basalt, and it does, for the most part, it does not make ODOT spec rock. And I know you know this because the discussions we've had. But if you don't have the river rock, that means you're going to be shipping aggregates to fuel the coastal communities from the valley and maybe even further to the east side. You know, issues like the Beaver State case that gets rid of all the small operators around the state is a policy move. Right now, if you look at maps of all the aggregate sites around the state, it forms almost a web. And there's concentrations around the local, government, the cities and things of that nature. But it basically forms a net. And if you get rid of all those small sites, what you're going to have is you're going to have only Goal 5 sites that are very close to the urban centers. And what's happening is we're headed towards the East Coast model of having these 1,000, 2,000, 5,000, 10,000 acre mega quarries that have huge rail systems that basically pump rock, you know, one or two quarries throughout the state to pump rock throughout the state. And I hope that's not a model that this state wants to go.
Rich, let's go back to my question.
Right.
Are we adequately protecting? I think from what you just said, the answer is no. Is it this department's role to inventory and to protect those sites?
It's the department's role to make sure that the counties are inventorying them and adequately protecting them, and they act as kind of an oversight to the county process to make sure that they're actually doing what the state law is. And that's where this position gets into a rub with the local governments and sometimes with legislators, is because they have to step in. This position steps in and says, no, you can't do this. If you do this, you're not following the state law. And, local governments have a hard time siting aggregate and protecting it because of the mining side of it. I think the position does a good job in that area, and it's a very thankless job. It's been one of those positions that has gone through people because it is kind of a thankless job. But it's very important that from the industry's perspective, that this position be funded and that it be maintained in order to try to protect aggregate throughout the state.
Mr. Chandler.
Mr. Chair, can
Excuse me.
You and I talked about this over the years from time to time. And I remember my first introduction, this whole thing with aggregate, it only goes on in one county in my district that I, but it's, and there was all this stuff going on with it, and I was ignoring it a lot and trying to hope somebody would settle it and it'd take care of itself or something would happen that was good, and it didn't. So finally, I was invited by one of the top officials of the aggregate company to have dinner. So we went into the heart of the district and sat down and had dinner. The waitress overheard what we were talking about and started lecturing him about what their company was doing. I can tell you that if I go into that part of my district, there is absolutely no question as to what they would say about this. Take those government officials and take them back home. They do not help us. They only create more problems for us. When they're supposed to be on nobody's side, they take sides. When they're supposed to be helping enforce the regulations that are put in place, they don't. Would you please stop spending my money that way? And so it's always been, I mean, it's definitely not an issue I choose to get in the middle of, but it seems to keep bouncing back up again. I remember we went round about one of these, I think it was the one in ODOT last session. But I want to be upfront about this. I can tell you exactly what my constituents would tell me. They are so grateful that most of that operation has left them. And I don't care if we're starting at the county commission level or we're working down to the neighbors or we're talking about the waitress at the restaurant. They all want them to go. They're actually okay with aggregate. It's how it's done, and they don't see the agency folks as helping.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, after our last aggregate hearing a few nights ago, I was hoping that Mr. Chandler, seated next to me, would volunteer to take over my job, but he was not interested in it. We have two things that we have to work on. Obviously, is an image issue and how the industry handles things. Coming from, you know, kind of the old way of doing things is we become more populated a state and more aware or more environmentally conscious. The old way of doing business is not working. But the other thing is that tension that you talked about is the tension over local control and state control of aggregate. And right now we have a funny blend that creates that. And there's no question I would have one preference for doing it, and maybe you would have another preference for doing it. But right now they seem to be there's kind of an equality in control. And so you get the two sides struggling back and forth about how things are going to happen. And that's where a lot of that tension comes from that you're speaking of. I know the specific circumstance, and I know how that site how that long history happened there, and frankly, I think the industry started that one almost two decades ago.
But I got another one coming into Deer Island.
Well,
if we could move along, Representative Krieger.
Just real quickly, I think this morning, Senator Dukes, remember I asked Mr. Brantley what economic development was doing to assist of businesses that want to come here and they're having trouble getting through LCDC, DQ, and Division mm-hmm. State Lands, and they have people that work with them. So for state agencies to advocate for business, the creation of business, I think that's normal. I don't object to that. I don't know if that's where Representative Johnson was coming from.
Probably not the regulating agency, though.
Yeah. Well, in this case, they are, because they're working with LCDC, DQ, and Division State Lands. I mean, that's the worst three in the world, in the whole world, not alone just Oregon. And so I find that expediting that conversation and finding solutions where it meets both the environmental things you're concerned about, they could actually play a role there. So I don't object to that.
Mr. Chandler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, John Chandler, Legislative Advocates, once again for the third or fourth time this week, glad I do not represent aggregate. Here on behalf of something that everybody likes, sprawling subdivisions and strip malls.
Right along here. Do you define strip malls first?
Not on your life. Don't need to see it, exactly. They're not a gravel pit. That's all I'm going to say about it. This is an interesting process, this session. I was sitting in the back of the room thinking about it and what to present today, because in times past, when agency budgets came before a particular subcommittee, and I was reminded earlier today, seeing Denny Jones in the building, who used to chair this subcommittee, it was a number that was on the piece of paper that didn't have a whole lot of relationship to policy one way or the other, and the interest groups and the supporters and opponents and hot lot would trip in front of the committee dutifully, say their piece, and nothing would change from the number. I think it's different now, and I think because of the budget crisis, we have an opportunity to look hard at the agencies, particularly the ones that have been in front of your committee, at what it is we want them to do, how it is we want them doing it, and how it ought to get paid for. And it's a hard job, but it is a long overdue. I think it's time with these various agencies to not to say what you're doing is wrong or the goals are incorrect or the policies are incorrect. How do you do it? Senator George, earlier this session, very thoughtfully introduced a bill to do away with land use planning in Oregon. I don't recall the number, but I will commend it to you not because of its content, because of its size. It's about 3/4 inch thick. Contains every cross-reference in Oregon Revised Statute to ORS 197, which is the land use statute. It shows in very graphic form the tentacles of this system that the DLCD and LCDC are administering. This permeates almost every factor of Oregon law, almost every factor of Oregon life. It is a subject not only in restaurants talking about aggregate, but I overhear people in the Albertsons checkout line talking about land use and zoning and density. I don't believe there's another place on earth where it is such a topic of conversation, such a part of people's background noise. And this agency, this little teeny agency with the rounding error budget, is in charge of it. That's a daunting task. My clients, the home builders, the commercial developers, industrial developers, contractors, we support this program. We believe in land use planning. We think it's been a good thing for us on balance. We haven't always supported the agency. We support the budget. We've had our squabbles. We've had our headbutts. And I think it's important to differentiate. You know, the agency is not the land use system. You can make changes to the agency. The agency can make changes to itself. It doesn't necessarily affect the land use system. The land use planning program needs to exist. You know, and failing passing Senator George's bill, which please do not do, you have to let this agency do its job, which means it has to have the money to do its job. It needs direction, and it needs help, it needs advice, and it needs counsel. But whether we like it or not, and one thing I know from my clients know this intimately, deeply, as do Mr. Angstrom, as do to a certain extent Mr. Schoenberg's, this agency is the narrow part of the hourglass. Almost everything we want to do from this point going forward on economic development, on job creation, on transportation, on everything we're talking about in other parts of this building and other bills, at some point goes through this agency. For better or worse. And so it has to have the resources. It has to have enough ability to make those things happen. During Mr. Kirchhoff's tenure, I was one of the ones very vocally in support of Mr. Kirchhoff. I agree with Mr. Van Lanningham. Paul turned out to be not the right guy for the job in terms of his management skills. But I liked what he was saying. And I was chatting, it actually was Mr. Van Lanningham and I had a conversation. And one of the comments was, well, how come I was the only person supporting Kirchhoff? And I said, well, A, I'm not. And B, the reason I am is because I don't want anything from this agency in particular. I don't want anything from the program. I don't have a position to protect. I don't have an interest there, really. I want different, better, other. What my clients need is a faster regulatory process, a streamlined one, something we can understand, get our hands around. Developers, business people can, yeah, you all know this. We can live with no. We can't live with maybe. We can't live with later. We can't live with we'll get back to you. And what I heard Mr. Kirchhoff saying was, we want to fix the system so it streamlines it faster, better, different. And I, as a result of the problems with Mr. Kirchhoff, I also heard this commission say that they were committing to making it streamlined, faster, better, different. Now, I don't know what that is. I know we're looking at a bunch of bills this session. Now, I'm not here to sell you a particular result. I think that we're looking at industrial land siting right now. We just passed that bill out of Senate committee this morning, Senate Bill 467. It has a lot of duties for these folks, for the staff. in going quicker on identification of land, on helping EDD identify sites around the state for industrial development, of getting the regulatory processes faster, reviewing local comp plans quicker. We have a bill in the House Committee 2909 that will pass out next week, I expect, on periodic review, where we're going to be, a group of us have been working with the department on making significant changes to the periodic review process. That's the one that local governments go through and get tortured for 8 or 10 years. We want that to happen different, quicker, better. Not that the plan shouldn't be reviewed or the system shouldn't be maintained and statewide, but that it happens faster. We have other bills going forward where we're looking at the community solutions team, which I know many of you in the legislature are very skeptical about. I think it's a heck of an idea. Maybe we don't want to call it that. Maybe that has Kitsaburian overtones. I don't know. But I think the functionality, folks, and what I want to, and I think this agency is critical because of this. You have had DEQ in here. I don't recall if you've done DSL yet. These various agencies are all in there doing their jobs, and they're doing it in a silo. The Community Solutions Team is a way of opening some windows. I think this agency's function as part of that, of getting, like Representative Krieger was just mentioning, working between agencies, working between different levels of government is critical, and these folks have to be part of that, which means they have to have the resources. I think that this commission can do it. I'm going to trust them. I have to have not a whole choice in trusting them, but I believe them when they say that they're committed to making it work better. And I hope you'll believe me that I'm not trying to pitch any particular outcome here. I don't know what, I think I'll know better when I see it. I'm not sure I know how to get there. I think the industrial lands piece is important. I think a specialist in that is important. They don't have anybody on staff right now that if you'll pardon me being blunt, knows anything about that. Might be nice to have some expertise there. I think that their role in working with local governments is going to be critical and helping them get their regulations in place better and faster and better, easier. One other last point I want to make, and I'll take questions. I noticed in the handout from the festivities this morning, further cut to this agency's budget. I'm not the guy who went running numbers, so I may be misinterpreting it, but the way I read it, there's another $500,000 coming out of the grant program to local governments. And no one in local government has asked me to carry this flag, but I've done it before, and I don't mind doing it again. Don't do that. If you're going to cut the grants, cut the regulations. Things run downhill. All sorts of things run downhill. We are victimized, you all are victimized, and us indirectly, by the federal government's tendency to say, go make it so and not give you the money. I would encourage you not to do the same thing here. Until we repeal some of the laws the local governments have to implement, to the extent the states make them do it, I think the state owes it to them to help them do it, give them the resources to make that happen. I would also submit to you that I think there's going to be an iterative process this session that makes it different than others. When the periodic review bill comes to form, and right now it's still in a work group, it's going to have implications on the staffing levels needed at DLCD. Because we're going to have them doing a different kind of work, a different level of work. I don't know how it's going to play out yet, but that'll feed back into your budget conversations and either free up some money or free up some people to do something else. I think there's still, this thing is so fluid in all the agencies that the various pieces of legislation going through, the industrial lands piece, for example, is going to ask agencies to focus in ways they never have. That'll also have implications on the budget, both to make sure they have the people to do it and perhaps reassigning folks or reallocating resources internally. In summary, Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity. Pardon my presentation's length. This is an important agency, and it's one of the most damn frustrating ones I've ever dealt with in my career. Not because of the people, because of so much of the subject matter. I think we're turning a corner here. It's an important one. And with this commission, Ms. Evans is an interim director. I don't know if she plans, or she's taken enough leave or census to apply for the position full time. We have a chance to get some leadership in there that's long overdue to work with the issues of getting to yes, being proactive, being more balanced. Hope you can help us. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Very good information. Good testimony. What I'd like to do, the committee, is get Mr. Schellenberg first, and then we'll open for questions. Do you want to pull the mic over?
It's taped. It was taped.
We'll fix that, right?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. Always difficult to follow Reverend Chandler.
when he makes a presentation. However, I would remind him that we do have a doctrinal difference probably in that he supports those strip malls. I would remind him that those strip malls came out of Mr. Angstrom's gravel pit, which tore up the and destroyed the farmland that our farmers need to protect.
Say that again. I like hearing that, Don.
I can see I shouldn't have had you guys up here together.
Nevertheless, Mr.
Chairman, I think you better make a short testimony.
That was that. We do support the budget and support the need for Department of Land Conservation Development. It's a very important department. We've had a lot of help from that department. Just the other day, one of your own members, Representative Scott, was in visiting with him, and he was showing me a bill that he had and a particular problem that he had with a piece of property of a constituent. And so he's introducing a bill to remedy that particular situation, which seems to happen here quite frequently lately. And so I said, that doesn't quite sound right, what they're telling you. And at the county level, and so I went to DLCD and talked with the farm specialist there. He says, no, he says, look in 92.010. He doesn't have a problem. It's fixed. And just to demonstrate that I go there for help all the time. People come to me, they want to do things on their property, on their farm property. And I said, well, you know, I think maybe you can do that, but, you know, let me check with DLCD. I know the guy over there that can tell me, you know, what we can or can't do here. And we oftentimes get help from them. The point being that we have a land use planning system. Yes, it's imperfect, needs some changes to it. We're working on those all the time. But if you're going to have a land use planning system, as Mr. Chandler said, you've got to have the agency that manages it. And they have to be funded well enough to do the job. The field staff is another important aspect. In Farm Bureau, we have a field staff. If we don't have a field staff connecting us to our members out there, there's a big disconnect. You got to have that. And so those positions are important as well. With that, Mr. Chairman, you can just offer our support.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Mr. Chandler, as usual, you have delivered very compelling testimony, and you certainly have left me with a renewed sense of urgency about what the agency is doing. But I don't think that you do the committee any service by trying to slip out of here with saying you don't know how to fix it. Because we've talked, and I know you have some thoughts. I don't know if... I don't know if you heard the testimony yesterday, but one of the things that the director was talking about the agency being involved in was helping people to know what to do on the beach and appreciate their time on the beach. It practically reduced the committee to tears.
I'll be darned.
My point, rather than dredge this up and torture Nan, the point that I'm trying to make is that you have described an agency, and your analogy to the small part of an hourglass will stay with me. You've described an agency that is pivotal in perhaps getting us out of the economic dilemma that we're in. And yet we're trying to build a budget that is sort of beat to fit, paint to match, just more of the same. And if we can get some federal money, we'll teach people how to walk on the beach. In this environment, that is nonsensical. If you started with a blank piece of paper and said, what should this agency be doing? How could they do it better? What if we threw the model completely out the window, stopped taking the federal money, stopped doing what they want us to do, and instead looked at an entirely different structure for this agency to get to the level of certainty that all three of you and your organizations want, that gets us a helpmate in an economic revitalization? What we're going to be asked to pass judgment on is a budget that is the status quo, even with all of the dilemmas and problems. But if you could rewrite the whole thing, give us some guidance as a legislature, not just this committee, about what this department ought to do to be part of the solution.
He charges for that. Your question.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to make him do it for free.
And if you could do that, John, in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Really, it might be more helpful, Representative, if all of you could give us some bullet points, a written statement that we can work off of as we get towards our work session and work through this situation.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be more than happy to do that. Can I respond very briefly, though? And I won't do the obvious ones about beach balls and sand buckets, but which I didn't know were available. It's kind of aggravating all these years. But the issue, and you have with this agency, as with any bureaucracy, it's more visible in small agencies. Issues of mindset, issues of how they think. There's a wonderful article in the paper the other day, a piece about Stephanie Halleck, who's doing a tremendous job at DEQ, and it is a nice little puff piece about Stephanie. If you read down through it, there's a quote there from a gentleman identified as DEQ employee and AFSCME president, and I showed it to some of you already, in which he said that, you know, there's talk about industry involvement, or public involvement means industry involvement in decision-making. That isn't what DEQ is about. DEQ is about saving the environment. That's a mindset, and the DLCD staff has a mindset, and it's not that they're wrong, it's simply that they have a mindset. What you need to figure out ways to do is engineer around that and find ways to make sure that doesn't get in the way of the economic recovery. I think in terms of prioritization, I'll be glad to give you a list. I thank you for the invitation, but to do it publicly so no one in the room thinks I'm taking pot shots, I think one of the first focus has to be on the leadership at the top, whether Ms. Evans or someone else, after she decides she's had all the funds she could tolerate, starting with the governor, that we are no longer going to tolerate this obfuscation. We're not going to tolerate not getting to yes. We are going to get things done quickly. We're not going to sacrifice the goal. By God, we're going to get them done in a hurry. We're going to get there. We're going to cut out the process, start looking at how to eliminate the steps, get to where things actually occur rather than get talked to death. The industrial land bill, I think, will help us do that. I think the periodic review reforms will help us do that. And I've maintained for many, many years that the focus of this agency, Rich, ought to be urban development issues. Not rural, aggregate. I understand. I'm not trying to sell these guys out. I'm talking specifically about where the grindy points are. It's not so much out in the pucker brush as it is on the fringe of the urban growth boundary, on how to do density inside, on how to get roads built, on how to get things done where the people are. Those are very difficult issues, and if I were king for a day or even second lieutenant for a day, I would say start your focus there. Economic development, housing, infrastructure, public utilities, transportation. Those are your focus. That's your job. The rest of it, do when you have time. But your job, the thing you do before you go home at night, is those things. That would be my short answer.
Thank you, John. Did you have a short comment? Because we do have to move along. I'm trying to get up to Denny Jones' reception here for us.
I was just going to say,
we could have him come down here for old time's sake.
I do want to.
He hasn't had a chance to slap the LCD around quite a few years.
He did a great job.
Yes, he did.
I do want to make a comment on the community solutions, though. I don't think there's anyone on this committee or that I know of in the body that doesn't support that kind of a function. The problem we have is, should that be a normal part of the department, or do you have to fund it separately? And quite frankly, I personally believe that the coordination of the agencies is a function of the governor's office. And that's where you pull the departments together, and that's where you make them, force them, to work together and to work as one team. And so I'm confident this governor that we have now is moving in that direction. But it's going to take some hard head knocking, quite frankly, to get there. So.
Yeah.
With that, I want to thank you all very much.
Thank you all.
Thank you. And call up Linda Ludwig and our Schlack, please. Do you have handouts?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Just visuals.
Okay. Go ahead, if you'd like.
Chair Messerly, members of the committee, Linda Ludwig, League of Oregon Cities. I also want to say that the League of Oregon Cities very much supports the land use planning program and, to a large degree, the budget that you have in front of you. What I would like to talk to you today, though, about is to support and this committee support the outcomes of House Bill 2909, which is a periodic review streamlining bill. I want to say that Representative Morgan's comments several days ago seemed apropos about talking about periodic review when she said it seems to be all about process and not about outcomes. I have in front of me the handout that you got from the department yesterday about the periodic review status report. And the numbers are great numbers here. But what you don't see at the outset, really, with this chart, is that half of all the counties in the state and one-third of all the cities in the state right now are in a periodic review work program.
Linda, do you have any information about what the average length of time is that people spend in periodic review, or the people that are in it now, how long they've been in it?
Chair Messowes, Representative Morgan, I don't have that specifics, and I have asked for those specifics in looking at the streamlining problem. We know there are over 500 work tasks. This is just the city side of work tasks. And with those work tasks, some of them you go back and you look through the document. Some of them were started in the early 90s, those programs. Some of them are still hanging from the late 80s. Some of those programs have started here in the last several years. But there seems to be quite a few of them, and trying to answer your question more specifically, that evolved between about 93 and 96. Since the inception of periodic review sometime in the mid-80s till today, there have been about the same amount of work tasks approved as we have outstanding today. So in a nutshell, what I'm trying to say is if no more local jurisdictions come into periodic review and we make the same progress as we have been over the course of the last 20 years, it will take us at least 20 more years to get through the stack of work programs. No more new work programs, and that's assuming that staffing levels at the department are going to stay at what we've seen them in the past, and we know that's not true. That assumes that there's going to be no new work focus in the department, and we know that's not true. Frankly, when you start looking through this and looking at trying to streamline it, it's a mess. It's a mess. And there's lots of contributing factors, two of which I think probably I'd like to highlight today. One of them, back in 97, Senate Bill 543 attempted to narrow down the focus of periodic review, and it also set a threshold at the size of cities and counties that were required to go into periodic review. Quite a few local jurisdictions, small ones, opted either to stay in or to continue or to develop new work programs for a variety of reasons. Yes, they would like to apply for the grant monies. Yes, they had local priorities, local plan amendments that they wanted to get done, and they opted to do that through the periodic review process. That's one of the large contributing factors. On the other side of the coin, another contributing factor that's incredibly large is the process, the departmental process that periodic review entails. It's long, it's messy. The negotiation process that starts out the process between local jurisdictions and the department sometimes can take 2 to 3 years in deciding what those work tasks will be. Sometimes in that negotiation process, a local jurisdiction might have started with 3 work tasks and they end up with 12 or 13. So that's really contributed to what we're calling the bulge in the work task problem. What we hope to do with this streamlining bill is to narrow that process in several ways. And I want to be frank with you. One of those ways is eliminating that negotiation process with the department and local jurisdictions. By developing some clear standards where local jurisdictions know what they need to do and have those standards be clear as far as what goal compliance actually is, not a moving target or a fuzzy target about maybe the work program has not been quite good enough, maybe you need some more time to redo it or do something additionally to it. So we're hoping to develop a clearer standard of what actually goal compliance is and have that incorporated in this bill. Given the reductions of local grant funds that we've seen here in this biennium and of what we know what we may be faced with, this becomes incredibly important to local jurisdictions. There has to be a balance for us locally and what the state can do and what's required of local jurisdictions. And at this point in the streamlining bill, we're not looking to get rid of any regulations. But what we're trying to do is set up a process where local jurisdictions can meet those regulations in several sets of manners, where they will still be required to comply with the goals and rules, but not all through the periodic review process.
I'm going to ask a question, but I'm willing to wait until Art's done.
Very well. Go ahead and finish your testimony.
I, of course, would like to advocate for the continued local grant program. The general fund allocation of those grants is continuing to be very, very important to us locally, as you've heard from me in the past.
I think, Linda, that the concern of this committee, at least mine, as we listen to the questions and conversations from this committee, is that with all the work that's going on right now to get employers and jobs for the citizens of the state of Oregon, and economic development and siting and everything else, that we don't want this periodic review and the land use process to be, as Mr. Chandler said, the choke point, where everybody's trying to do the right thing and all of a sudden we just can't get them through the process. So I think we share the same concern, except that I'm concerned also in your remarks about the periodic review that some communities, I think maybe you said this, that is part of their moving forward. They have to upgrade their plan so that they can move forward. Well, we did hear that on an emergency basis the department moves those request through as fast as they can, which is better, but that also delays the long term, the bigger. Representative Morgan?
The periodic review process, I think, is an incredible pinch point in the way that the department functions. And we got a handout from the department dealing with the issue. And when I look at the examples that they put forward, I would assume that they wouldn't give us the glaringly horrible examples, but we have five examples here, and none of these people have actually managed to make it through the process. And they're in here like 9 years, 11 years, 8 years, 6 years, 8 years. And then there is, these are the counties that are in periodic review, and these are the cities that are in periodic review. So you've got this humongous clot of planning that's taking place here that must be sucking an enormous amount of resources out of the local jurisdictions, an enormous amount of resources out of the agency, just to deal with this gigantic jigsaw puzzle that is in some stage of construction that we have obviously no hope of ever getting our hands around. I just think that this is so indicative of what is problematic about this agency. I mean, we see on this goal thing here, optimize development, provide buildable lands, streamline government, make community transportation work better, and yet we've got this massive bureaucratic boondoggle that's got everybody stopped up in a bunch of counties and a bunch of cities throughout the state. And it's really difficult for me to believe that throwing a couple of more positions at this whole problem is going to have any positive impact on actually solving it. I go back to Mr. Chandler's thought that this is a mindset within the agency. And until we can get to the place where process is not the name of the game, that we're looking for outcomes and we're looking for the fastest, straightest, cheapest, most certain route to an outcome, it's only when we get to that kind of a mindset in this agency that things like this are going to quit consuming all of the energy that they consume. And that's what's so frustrating with me, because, you know, here's my third go-round on this budget and my third legislative session, and the discussions are the very same. The only difference is that now the economy of the state is tanked, and we don't have the money to put into perpetuating this.
Black, why don't you go ahead, and then if you've got comments afterwards, that's fine.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. And interesting, Representative Morgan, that you should bring up periodic review and how long some counties have been in it. And I grant you it's been a very long time. Before I make a comment with respect to that, let me generally say that the Association of Oregon Counties supports the budget that's before you. I say that with an asterisk. As I participate this session, Mr. Chandler indicated there are a number of bills that are tracking. Some of those are going to have major impact not only on the department, but on local government and their needs. And so I would just submit to you that this budget should be considered in flux. And it should be assessed as you go on the next few weeks based on the bills that are tracking through and those that are passed. And there may be, I would suggest there may be some additions and there may be some deletions at this point, or maybe it nets out, I don't know. But certainly the things that are in the silos that they're in right now might not meet the needs of the department and the state and local government as partners in the planning process by the end of the session, because I don't think we're going to see the same system in a way, or the same priorities in the system as we've seen over the last few biennium at this point. That being said, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, when we look at the department's budget, we place priorities on their field staff, and this is field staff that is working or interfacing with local governments. We also place a priority on the grants to local government. This whole system is a partnership, and LCDC cannot do what we've asked to have done in terms of comprehensive planning by themselves. The implementation of the whole program is that with cities and counties. That's where the people come. That's where they get the answer yes, or they get the answer no, as Mr. Chandler knows. And if he can get an answer no, he says he's real fast, he's okay. But that's where the rubber hits the road. And so we need to be able to provide the opportunity for the local governments to do what they need to do to provide or to give the answers, to do the planning and give the answers to the citizens and to the developers and to move forward with the idea of revitalizing our economy. It'll take the changes in local comprehensive plans. It'll take permits to be issued in a faster manner at the local level in order for that to happen. If the only other alternative that I know at this point is if we're going to supersite everything and we're going to have all permits done at the state level, then the state can be responsible and the locals will just sit back and watch. But I don't think that's the system you want. I know that's not the system my elected, you know, the elected officials that I represent want. So this budget needs to be molded in a manner so it provides opportunities to assist us both to do the job I think that the legislature wants us to do. And I guess that partnership, I want to just emphasize the partnership, because earlier today, and Representative Morgan, I think at one time you were on one of the committees that dealt with land use, and I watched today as the House Environment and Land Use Committee was in a trying to move bills out, and I reflected that the statewide planning commission was in session again, and here we were micromanaging the land use system. Now we got the land use system at the local level. And then we got the, you know, well, really what we have is, you know, the land use system is driven by state policy. State policy that's provided by the legislature. That is further articulated in a way by the commission through the goals and the administrative rules, and then the local governments are implementing it. Well, unfortunately, when people don't get the answer sometimes they want at the local level, they come to the legislature and say, I'd like legislation that deals with this 20 acres, and we wind up with this piece of legislation that says, only in this case, and if you're under a certain size, and this and that and that, thus, you know, you can do X. And that's because they weren't allowed to do it. And I'm not sure that that, I think that provides frustration. Frustration by, I think, everybody in terms of, you know, understanding the state system, because they participate locally, and then things happen at the legislature sometimes that, you know, then gets filtered down to the local, and then you say, well, you can't do this because, or you can now do this that you know, you couldn't do before because the legislature's spoken, and you can do this. And people get frustrated, and the land use planning program gets a bad name. That's a long way to kind of indicate a frustration, and maybe there's something that can be done to help alleviate that. I think the statewide planning program is a good program, and it is supported by county, by the 36 counties of the state of Oregon. This budget at this time needs to be crafted in a manner so it benefits not only the state but local government as we move forward in a partnership manner to address the issues that I believe the legislature has, and that's turning the economy around and trying to provide a stimulus to the economy. I know that the industrial bill that is working its way through will require a lot of work by local government to help implement that. Without it, it won't happen. So, with that, Mr. Chair, happy to answer questions.
I just have a couple comments before I open this up for questions. I know Representative Krieger has a question. It's my observation, Mr. Slack, that the closer you live to Salem, the more problems you try to solve here at the legislature. And the farther you live away, the more they go to the county commissioners, quite frankly, or the cities, which has always kind of intrigued me, but I think it's true. The other thing I wanted to say is that the recommended reductions in grants to local governments was not a recommendation out of this committee, and that's something that we're going to be dealing with as we put these budgets together. We have started to prioritize our budgets in all the agencies, and that was not, at least to this date, one of our recommendations. So we'll deal with that. Representative Krieger.
Senator Measuring. That would bring up administrative rules and seeing that adopted by many agencies and then backed up by a court that would have never gotten a million years through this billing by any test of a hearing, yet the agency ends up having to enforce them. The other thing was Representative Morgan talked about mindset. It came to mind that when I have employees and I'm having trouble with their mindset, I connect directly their wages and step increases to their output. Perhaps that would change the mindset of the agency with the people in it, if that's part of the problem.
Further comments, questions, Vance, whatever? We have no further people signed up for public testimony, so I will close the hearing on whatever bill this is and adjourn the